listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Thursday evening, Smack Talk Radio Live, back on the air, the best in wrestling talk radio. I'm the heel, Corey Callahan, sitting alongside the babyface, James McDonald.
Wow, big praise tonight.
The tweener.
That's me.
Corey Basso in studio tonight.
Hello, fellas.
How are you doing tonight, boys?
Very good.
Very good. James?
Can't complain, my friend. Can't complain.
It's been a crazy day trying to get this show up and going, I'd have to admit.
Sometimes it just takes a little bit more work than other days, I guess.
We put
right?
so much work in prepping the show that now I'm tired by the time we get to doing the show.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, this is not the first time. I may be mistaken, but is this not the first time Smack Talk has had two guests at the same show?
No, that would be wrong. We have had shows in the past where we have two guests.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm an idiot.
Oh, you said it, not me. What's funny, though, James, is Basso said to me earlier today that I am the heel of the radio show, and you're the babyface. Would you agree?
I can see how some people would get that dichotomy between us.
And Basso hasn't been in studio long enough for us to figure out if he's a heel or face, so he's a tweener.
Sure.
Sometimes I say things that piss people off. Sometimes I'll make you smile.
www.smacktalkradiolive.com, facebook.com/smacktalkradio, and if you're not on Twitter already, my God, what do I even say to you?
Get trendy.
At SRL Radio. Basso, you on Twitter?
At CD, as in compact disc, Basso, B-A-S-S-O, and that's where you can find me.
Why compact disc?
My initials, Corey.
Hmm, interesting, yes.
Okay. You're lucky enough to have CM, like CM Punk. I get CD, so there you go.
So we are on the road to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Before we get into the whole post-to-post report and get everyone caught up, thoughts on Monday Night Raw this week?
I enjoyed it. It was a decent show right up to the very end, and then that kind of left me scratching my head going, what?
Yes. Basso?
You know, it wasn't one of my favorite Raws. They made progress in their storylines. But besides that, I don't think anything too shocking that I'm going to remember over the course of like a year. I'm not going to remember this next year.
Yeah.
It feels like they're really rushing into this pay-per-view, doesn't it?
Totally.
I completely agree, disagree.
Well, actually. Actually, they've had 6 weeks to build it up. For some reason, I feel like such little has happened in these 6 weeks. I know that sounds crazy considering we have the emergence of Ryback, but I just feel like the rest of the show has been a bit of a time filler for me, and that sounds terrible. I know.
I think it's, you say not enough has been happening. I think too much has been happening, especially in the main event scene. You've had, excuse me, Mick Foley,
mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon, and Ryback all interjected into a feud between Cena and Punk.
I know.
And now Punk isn't even fighting Cena. It's so much.
Don't forget Jim Ross. He's in there, too.
Oh, right, Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler. So many people have been put in that Punk feud, and it just seems like a waste now.
Yeah, you're right. No, it's, maybe I'm wrong on that one. God damn.
That's why you guys bring me to the show. I'm the tweener, baby. Oh,
all
yeah.
Right.
We got to knock the heel down, don't we?
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Well, everyone hold their thoughts on the week it was in professional wrestling. Before we get into it all, let's catch everyone up with the post-to-post report.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
You know, I didn't even mention, guys, that we actually have two killer interviews tonight planned. We're talking with Sid Sylum from the ECCW here in Vancouver, and our biggest interview yet to date. I don't know. Would you agree?
Maybe by our standards, because we're a big fan of this guy, definitely. Maybe as far as other people are concerned, maybe not so much, but I think this is huge. It's huge for me.
We're talking to Bernie Robichaud. He played the character Cyrus on the Trailer Park Boys. Doesn't get any better than that.
Well, I'm glad you guys are excited about it.
James was not aware of who he was.
I had no clue who this guy was.
James, you're not a true Canadian. Hand in your passport. Yeah. Give up your ID. You're not allowed to vote. You're not Canadian, my
it's
friend.
True.
I don't eat maple syrup. I don't live in an igloo.
I'm pretty sure you live in a cave.
I don't drive a dog sled.
I don't know. I loved Cyrus and Trailer Park Boys, so I'm really looking forward to that interview a little later. But in terms of the post-to-post report this week, we're going to start the report with some interesting details regarding WrestleMania. You listening, Vancouver? The New York Post picked up on the story earlier this week that WrestleMania 29 is expected to bring over $100 million to the New Jersey, New York area when it descends on MetLife Stadium in April. This is according to a recent study. With WrestleMania 27 bringing in an estimated $60 million to Atlanta's local economy in 2011, it was revealed recently that WrestleMania 28, the ones that James and I went to, it shattered that record that brought in an estimated $102.7 million for the city of Miami. This would be direct, indirect, and induced impact derived from spending by non-locals visiting specifically for WrestleMania. Now, it was reported that WrestleMania also brought in over $15 million in taxes for the Miami area. Over 70,000 are expected to attend WrestleMania 29 in New Jersey, New York. And just as a reminder, tickets for the big show go on sale November 10th.
Well,
a lot of money right there.
That's WrestleMania for you.
And here we have people in Vancouver questioning whether we should even attempt to bring it. I think we should be looking at this thing seriously, because to bring in over $100 million
that's
to a local
huge
economy,
huge.
Other than the Super Bowl, what else is doing that?
Now, have they given any estimation of where these numbers are coming from, Miami? Where is most of the money being made? Is that in there?
Well, they're saying that this figure is coming from direct people coming from out of town specifically for WrestleMania.
Guys like Corey and I.
Exactly. That could be hotels, yep, restaurants, you know, the ticket sales. Everything you're doing in Miami while you're there is contributing to that $100 million.
Well, I completely agree, because I'll take you guys back to last year when Vancouver hosted the Grey Cup, mm-hmm, with the brand new BC Place Stadium. We had people coming all the way across Canada to see a football game when their team wasn't even in it. Mm-hmm. So if you can go and see a wrestling match with all the wrestlers on it, and it's not just a Canadian thing, like, we all know the NFL is bigger than the CFL, but this is worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, there are guys like us where we will travel to watch a big show.
Yes.
Why can't Vancouver pull it off?
Well, Hulk Hogan held a press conference Monday to announce that legal action he's taking over the unauthorized production and distribution of his infamous sex tape. And he's looking for over $100 million from the parties involved. Now, Hogan's attorney revealed they are suing Gawker.com, the website that published a preview of the video, and also Bubba the Love Sponge and Heather Clem, Heather being the woman involved in the video, and Bubba being her husband. Now, while the drama continues to unfold, Hogan and Bubba were once best friends, but Hogan apparently believes that Bubba may be the one who released the video. The question remains still, boys. Are you going to be watching it if it's released?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, brother.
Being the babyface, I have to say no. So
I got to
stay squeaky clean here.
The one thing I wanted to say about this, this is an update from last week's Post-to-Post report, is Hogan is doing a good job of making publicity out of this. Because if he's going to have his name tarnished, and if he's going to go down in flames of being a celebrity who has a sex tape, at least he's making the media rounds. I mean, he was on Howard Stern. He's holding press conferences with lawyers. He's getting his face out there. So he is, in a sense, capitalizing off the possibility of this sex tape being released.
Well, what's the old saying? Any publicity is good publicity?
And there's no such thing as a bad porno in wrestling, especially when you got the likes of China putting them out there. So you know what, Hulkster? You're doing A-okay.
Unbelievable. The Nature Boy, Ric Flair, Cowboy Bill Watts, and Chris Taylor, they've been chosen to be inducted in the 2013 class of the George Tragos Lou Thesz Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame weekend will take place July 12th and 13th in Waterloo, Iowa. Now, while the 16-time world champion Ric Flair needs no reminder, Chris Taylor, he was an NCAA champion for Iowa State in 1972 and 73, and a bronze medalist in the 72 Olympics.
Wow.
Taylor also had a 3-year career in the AWA, starting in 1974, but he actually died at the young age of 29 in 1979.
Oh, that's sad.
Bill Watts was a successful wrestler and promoter, ranking in the worldwide top 10 for over 25 years.
So this is like the actual legit Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, as opposed to the WWE.
We've reported on this before. I believe it was JBL that went in last year, and Mark Henry, Kurt Angle, I believe, has gone into this.
That's right. I remember now.
But Drew Carey and Mike Tyson aren't in this one?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure they'll be on.
I'm waiting for that.
Along with David Arquette.
Well, that just gives it instant credibility.
Yeah. Actually, it is a very reputable Wrestling Hall of Fame. You shouldn't knock it. It is one of the better ones, because it's not by the WWE. It's by a committee within the United States.
Right. Now, Fred Ottman, better known to the wrestling world as Tugboat, Typhoon, or the Shockmaster to most, well, he resurfaced last Saturday at a Pro Wrestling Syndicate event in Rahway, New Jersey. And get this, he donned the infamous character's mask and played the role of the Shockmaster. His job for the show was announcing the intermission, and it's reported he did not fall while doing so.
I know. A million jokes to go with there. I'm not even sure which one to go with.
Well, I'm just happy he made an appearance, and I'm going to put the rumor out there now. Shockmaster, Royal Rumble 2013. It's going to happen. You're going to see an appearance. He's back on the scene, baby.
As long as he falls, like, making his way down to the ring, then
yeah,
he'll have burst happy through the Titantron, yes.
Now, how is this for some must-see video, guys? Remember a couple of weeks ago when we talked about former WWE wrestler Daivari? He used a rear naked chokehold to take down an unruly passenger on a train in Minnesota.
That was insane.
Well, surveillance footage of the incident has finally surfaced, and you have to see this.
Really?
A passenger on the train becomes belligerent, at one point apparently yelling racial slurs and threatening to kill someone. Daivari, sitting on the train, he had enough. He takes the man down with a rear naked chokehold and kept him on the ground with a body scissors, forcing the guy to lose consciousness and also control of his bladder. Look it up online. It is very entertaining.
I think I'll pass on that one.
No, it's good, man. Seriously.
any better or any worse than CM Punk's altercation with a gentleman in the crowd?
It's comparable. At least this is justified.
There you go.
Now, in terms of financials this week, the WWE stock price, it closed at $8.17 a share. That's down 16 cents since last week. Not going to make too much of a deal of that one. In terms of television ratings this week, though, Monday Night Raw on October 15th, it scored a 2.79 rating, almost the same as last week's 2.78. Raw averaged just under 4 million viewers with an average of 3.99 million for all 3 hours, which was down 3% from last week. In terms of the three hourly breakdowns, the first hour had an average of 4.07 million viewers in the first hour.
Right.
4.01 in the second and 3.89 million in the third. So it's a bit of a declining audience as you head deeper into the 3 hour show. And a little surprising because Monday Night Raw did not gain any viewers despite Monday Night Football losing viewership this week by 9%. And that was actually the lowest ratings for the NFL since week one. So you would think with Monday Night Football on the decline
that maybe Raw would pick up some of those viewers, but it doesn't seem to be happening.
Doesn't look like we can blame Monday Night Football this week.
Huh.
Interesting.
Maybe a lowered presence of John Cena?
Do I really want to go in there?
I think it is. I really think it is.
You do?
I think so. I mean, a lot of people are upset. I mean, I went to the house show in Everett a couple weeks ago, and they were offering refunds at the door. A lot of people were there to see Cena, and I think the absence of Cena or the detraction of his role, rather, in the show is probably to blame for that.
How was that Everett show, by the way? So Cena wasn't there.
Cena was not there, no. But since they announced right at the top of the show anybody seeking a refund who are here to see John Cena, and there were a lot of people there to see John Cena.
Wow.
They were offering refunds. And
can you actually blame television ratings off one person? To me, that just it just says the state of the company is not doing so well when the whole company's on one guy's shoulders.
That's what happens when you push one guy and only one guy for years on end.
I guess so. Well, we're going to get into Monday Night Raw here. We're gonna go over it all in a segment we call Tale of the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
All right, so let's get into it, boys. John Cena having a minimal role this week on Monday Night Raw, which means CM Punk's carrying the show. Now, this is 1 week after CM Punk and the infamous backhand to
the fan altercation incident, yes.
So, you know, he did face Vince McMahon 2 weeks ago. So we have the aftermath of Vince McMahon this week on Raw, I should
right.
say. I'm losing it tonight, I'm sorry.
Well, Vince basically gave him the ultimatum at the end of the Raw 2 weeks ago, right? That he had to make a decision. It's going to be either John Cena or Ryback. And now, coming into Raw this week, we're kind of following that up a bit.
And here you have... Well, how did you think Raw was going to start this week? I mean, we didn't even start with CM Punk on Monday Night Raw.
No, it was...
We started with Big Show.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I thought for sure we were going to start with either, like, a Vince coming out or maybe CM Punk or even John Cena. Like, something to do with the title, WWE title picture. But no, it was... Yeah, it was Big Show.
And did you like that? That they gave it to someone else?
I didn't mind it. I didn't think it was the greatest segment to open off the show with, but...
Faso?
I kind of agree. It wasn't anything earth-shattering. Usually you like to open up Raw with a bang. I thought it was just okay, to be quite honest.
I got to say, I was most interested to see what would happen with the Vince McMahon-CM Punk angle, because I had said on last week's show that I thought it was kind of thrown together at the last minute, and I was surprised these two were having a match so quickly. I argue that it was for ratings, and I think everyone kind of thinks that they did it for ratings. But it was going to be interesting to see what the follow-up was. Here's CM Punk talking about his match last week against Vince McMahon.
It was very sad and pathetic, and it was typical Vince trying to make everything about Vince. You know, this show doesn't revolve around one guy, you know? But he seems to think it does. Now, he came out here and he disrespected me. So I slapped him in the face. Now think about that. I slapped Vince McMahon in the face, the owner of this company. And then he finds his magical grapefruits and then he challenges me to a match. And he put up a fight. You all saw it. He did a real good job. He's all heart, but I put such a beating on him. I victimized Mr. McMahon in such a way that I feel comfortable in letting you all know that you will never see Vince McMahon compete in this very ring ever again. And for that, you can thank me.
I don't think that will be the last we see of Vince McMahon, but maybe it is.
I found it really odd on Raw how they were teasing a second confrontation between Vince McMahon and CM Punk almost the whole show. And then when we get to the end, they like didn't mention it. There's no mention of it at all. There was no payoff or anything. So
the other issue I had with Monday Night Raw to start off the show was they had left us last week with, okay, CM Punk needs to make a decision. You know, are you going to face Ryback or are you going to face John Cena?
Right.
Well, we start this week's show, and I was thinking that we were going to have CM Punk come out right away and tell us at the beginning of the show.
Something like that, yeah.
And part of the reason why I thought that was because CM Punk also came on Twitter earlier that day saying, I've made my decision. I'm going to announce it on Monday Night Raw. Now, typically when wrestlers do that on Twitter, it's just really to get that last-minute grab
right.
at some fans who were on the fringe of watching Raw or not. Hopefully, that will convince them. So we start Monday Night Raw off thinking CM Punk is going to tell us, but no, they delay it to the end of the show. Well, we have to wait. We've already waited a week. Now we have to wait another 3 hours.
Well, and another thing that I found really odd about the whole progression of this angle to the very end of the show is, first it's CM Punk making the decision, then it's Vince McMahon making the decision, and then when we get to the very end of the show, it's John Cena that makes the decision. So it's...
I have a feeling that...
It was really anticlimactic and just confusing for me anyway.
I was going to say, I have a different... Like, I have a feeling about that when they actually do reveal who CM Punk is facing. I don't think that was supposed to happen the way it went down. I think Cena just kind of stole the thunder from Vince McMahon and told the world who Punk would be facing before Vince McMahon got the opportunity.
Well, it almost felt like they were waiting like right until the very last second to see if Cena was going to be good to go or not.
And you know, but we get 3 hours into Raw and we finally get to the big announcement. So like you had said, we have no match between CM Punk
yeah,
and
there
Vince
was,
McMahon.
They were teasing this confrontation all night. He sends Paul Heyman to tell him, yeah, I want to fight you again. And
nothing. Vince McMahon, and we're also led to believe that it's going to be that the decision of who he faces has been taken out of CM Punk's hands and put into Vince McMahon's hands. So we're expecting Vince McMahon to lay down the decision. But really, in the end, it's not either one of them. Listen to what happened at the end.
Feed me more. 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 Feed me more.
Oh, Oh my God, it's official.
It's official. CM Punk will defend the WWE Championship inside Hell in the Cell against Ryback.
Now, Basil, I'm pretty sure it was you that had said, why did they do that? Why did John Cena do that the way he did? Why did he come out and just mark out for Ryback?
I don't know. I don't have an answer, man. I wish I had an answer for
you. It looked a little strange.
Wasn't it, though?
It was completely strange. I mean, here you have John Cena for weeks on end saying, I'm determined to be in this Hell in a Cell match against CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end of Raw, you have him, you know, a guy who's supposed to never back down or never quit from a challenge.
He yeah.
Totally, you know, moves out of the way for Ryback and it endorses just, him.
You're right.
It's very, very confusing.
You're convincing the fans for weeks up until this Monday that you are going to be in the match and you are going to step in Hell in a Cell. And then when it came time to signing the dotted line, he walked away.
The problem
that looked like a fool doing it, if you ask me.
The problem that bothers me is that it just seems like the whole marking out thing, going back to that with John Cena chanting Ryback's name, cheerleading for Ryback, essentially, is, I don't know if I have a proper grasp on this Ryback character, but for some reason, he seems like the type of guy where if you marked out in front of his face, he'd destroy you. Hmm. If Kofi Kingston or Daniel Bryan did that, he would pick them up and vault them and kill them. Why would it be any different for John Cena? Why has he all of a sudden become... He's face. He's supposed to be a monster. Like, yeah. He shouldn't care. He should be just rolling over people, but now he's just he's a filler now.
Well, maybe that's one of the reasons that Ryback is getting over with the fans so much these days, is because he's different from all the characters that have come before him that are kind of in his mold. I mean, you think about big monster characters, right? They're always coming out as heels, essentially, right? And I think having Ryback be this kind of babyface character is something different and something new, and maybe that's part of the reason why he's getting over with fans so much.
In terms of why John Cena chanted "Feed me more" the way he did, you could always argue that that is sort of a indirect passing of the torch while John Cena is injured. John Cena is marking out, trying to get the fans behind Ryback because Cena has to take a back seat for a little while and he needs to pass his torch on to someone.
So you're saying that Cena feels somewhat responsible for not being in the main event, but he still wants the main event to be a Cena-like main event, so he's trying to put it over kind of thing?
It's just his last-minute way of saying, okay, I'm not going to be in this match because everyone knows I'm still injured, but this is the guy and I'm throwing my weight behind this guy and so should you.
Okay. I mean, I guess.
I thought it looked stupid.
I think that's the only reasonable explanation maybe for him doing that.
I think we all can agree here, though, that the original plan was for John Cena.
That was always the plan going forward.
The backup
plan
was Ryback, and unfortunately, they had to institute the backup plan because John Cena is just not going to be ready.
Now, I heard grumblings. I'm probably just more hearsay from the internet wrestling community, but I heard that Vince McMahon was a second backup. A Punk Vince Hell in a Cell.
Apparently that idea was shot down in like 30 minutes
or
something.
I heard it was promptly shot down, yes.
But can you imagine that? Who are you hearing all this stuff from?
I also heard rumors that they were planning to put Ziggler against CM Punk as a backup. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Hmm. But it's interesting. I mean, it really is in a time of flux right now, isn't it?
Well, let me.
I swear the world collapses when John Cena's not there. I hate that feeling.
Do you guys feel that Ryback is ready for this main event status that has been thrust upon him?
Nope.
No. Never.
And here's why. I will never be behind Ryback until he faces and beats Goldberg at WrestleMania.
Oh, God. Get it off.
Are we really getting
Goldberg
on that right away?
Yes. Jeez. Yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I cannot, as someone who is in their late 20s, almost 30, I cannot get behind this guy when the exact same character took place 10 years previous. And the truth of the matter is, I think Goldberg makes Ryback look weak, because Goldberg is just, he was a horse when he was in the ring. And I've seen moments of weakness with Ryback, both on the microphone and in the ring. And if you are going to sell me that this guy is the new Goldberg, I need to see something Goldberg-esque before I believe it. Now, that being said, am I excited for Ryback versus CM Punk? I think it's interesting, not because I'm excited to see the match, but because I'm interested to see, are they actually going to run with this guy? Because if they make CM Punk lose the title to Ryback, I'm going to be absolutely shocked that they are running with this guy. Because the truth of the matter is, I don't think he's ready.
No, I don't think he's ready either. And
but
for two reasons.
Sorry, just before you go with those two reasons. At the time Goldberg won the WCW World Heavyweight Championship, he was beyond ready. and everyone thought he should have won the title months prior.
Well,
to that.
Yeah, he smashed the lower card, then he made his way through the mid card, and he finally started, you know, squashing some main eventers, and he made his way up to Hogan. Finally.
And to me, the biggest draw with Ryback is Goldberg versus Goldberg at WrestleMania. That brings the most money to
it. I don't even put Goldberg and Ryback in the same picture.
It'll never happen, but I wish it did.
I was going to say, I think you're going to be waiting a long time, my friend, so we might as well just release
Goldberg.
I was going to say, my two reasons that I don't think Ryback is ready for this main event status is, number one, he has not proven himself on the microphone
in any way.
I mean, the only thing we've ever seen him say is, what, feed me more or feed me Punk or something. He hasn't said anything else to that degree. And number two, like, what really prominent moments has he had? What really big matches has he had? Like, who's been the top guy that he's beat so far?
He took out those two local jobbers on the UK tour.
Stan Stansky, don't get me wrong, I'm feeling Stan Stansky, but I mean, like, what has he really done to deserve this main event status? I mean,
well, he took out David Otunga and Dolph Ziggler this week. I was surprised they fed Ziggler to Ryback.
That's probably a slap in the face to Ziggler, if you ask me.
I know. I don't know. I'm just not a fan of this whole time in the WWE. I can understand why they are going this route. You know, you have momentum behind this guy. You need a main event draw. Ryback is a good opponent for CM Punk. I think the winning streak for Ryback ends at Hell in a Cell.
Do you guys feel that WWE could possibly have another top babyface on their hands, or are we facing another Lex Luger here? Lex Luthor.
I think this is a short-term gain, someone to feed to the main eventers as a worthy opponent, but in the end just doesn't get the job done.
So what do you guys think the finish then for this match is going to be? Give me a prediction here for Hell in a Cell.
I think CM Punk beats him clean.
I don't think Punk beats him clean. I think Punk beats him with interference, whether it's from Heyman, a new member of their stable, or something dirty. I can't see Punk going over clean, but I can't see Ryback winning. I think Punk goes over dirty.
I think we're going to see interference from Brock Lesnar, and that's going to cost Ryback the match, and that's going to set up a CM Punk, Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, Ryback at Survivor Series tag match.
That's smart booking. WWE wouldn't do that.
You could argue that line with everything, though.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I've already used that line like 20 times on this show.
Okay, I'll put it in my back pocket for next year.
Maybe I should say that's what I'd like to see happen. Okay.
Fair enough. We're going to kind of keep the WWE talk a little shorter than we do this week because we want to get to local wrestling and focus more on that. But a couple more things I wanted to bring up this week in our Tale of the Tape. Kofi Kingston versus The Miz this Monday on Raw. Quite the ending.
Holy smokes.
Here, let's have a listen to it.
That's great instinct by Miz. Perhaps not there, but he did roll himself out of the way as Kofi went for the boom drop.
Miz had the right idea. And now lands on his feet. Nice
look at this.
Counter.
Skull crushing finale time. Kofi counters.
Miz counters.
Again. Skull crushing finale. Kofi tries to fight out of it and successfully does.
Kofi popped his hips and got rid of a Miz on that occasion. There you go. There's a tightness. There's a tightness.
What a move by Kingston.
It was quite the finish.
Now, I think at the end of that match, they had to have somebody from the top level come back down and give Miz his head back because...
Well, there were...
That was a field goal, man.
No one really knew if the Miz was seriously hurt or if it was just a really good...
Are you kidding me?
That had to be
how
a concussion, man.
How could you...
He's apparently okay, though.
Concussion city.
But then, the next night, they go into the SmackDown tapings and they do their tapings for main event, for this upcoming week's main event TV show. And they announce it before it even airs on television.
Yeah, that was weird.
That Kofi Kingston has beat The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship.
Something smells fishy there to me.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm not just talking about Miz's awful haircut either. I'm talking about that. Isn't it weird that Miz was rolling along with that Intercontinental title reign? He has Miz TV now. They're obviously putting the ball in his hands when it comes to that upper mid card.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he's dropping the title on main event. I know they're trying to put over a new hot show, but he's dropping the title on main event prematurely, in my opinion. And something screams out to me that maybe he did take a knock in that kick to the head.
Now, let me ask you this. If you are the champion and you get injured by a competitor in the ring, and you are unable to continue with that title because you are injured, is it right to lose it to the guy who ended up putting you on the shelf for a little while?
I don't think it's right or wrong. I mean, Miz is probably maybe pissed off inside personally, but I think if you're not able to compete, you're not able to compete. I mean, Shawn Michaels lost his smile and gave up a belt. Yeah. So if you're hurt, then you can
drop it. What about after that complete verbal lashing that The Miz gave to Kofi on Monday Night Raw?
Well, these guys got really good chemistry together, both on the mic and in the ring.
Do you think The Miz should have done that?
I thought it helped their feud along.
Yeah. It sounded very real. Yeah. It sounded very real, and you know what? It sounded truthful.
Yeah.
Like, but to me, it buried Kofi.
Was very negative, but it was very real sounding.
It was, and it's real, like you were saying, Corey, real sounding promos like that, to me, it adds interest to a program for me.
I thought the exact same thing that you were saying. That I was like, man, he is burning Kofi down. But you know what? Nobody ever wants to be that person who's getting burnt down. So right away, I think everyone's like, kick his head off. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it worked. I really think it worked.
So do you think this is now Kofi's time to shine?
Well, I think maybe we're going to see a little bit of a revival for both. At least Kofi.
I think Kofi's going to get a revival singles-wise. Because if you think about it, he was kind of muddled. He held the tag belt with Evan Bourne and then R-Truth, which were both good little lengthy rings for Kofi. But I think he's ready to hit the singles again. And I think the Intercontinental scene is a good scene for him to hit. I know he could face guys like Damian Sandow, Cody Rhodes. There's a good upper mid-card in the WWE. And Kofi's a great wrestler, so I think it would work.
Do you guys feel that Kofi's maybe ready, just quickly here, ready to make that jump to the main event?
I don't think he's ready for a main jump yet.
No, main event. But here are a group of guys that are ready for the main event.
What?
Let's just have a listen, and then we'll start talking about them.
Who is it?
Hey! Nashville Music City! Listen up! You call this music?
You guys are loving it that much.
My initial question after watching that segment was, why does the security guard have handcuffs?
And my other question is, this is a brand new group of three guys, and they get manhandled by the security team at the bar, and they're supposed to be a threat in the WWE?
I don't think they're supposed to be a threat. It's like the equivalent of three count back in the late WCW days.
Okay, well, what do you make of these guys? I mean, we've seen them for a couple weeks. They came out and they tried to do this. The three of them were ganging up and taking out other wrestlers. But now they've changed their look. They're now the three-man band, and they're dressing up in, rock stars.
I definitely like the change of look. The hard rock kind of leather and jeans look, I think, works. Definitely for Drew McIntyre. Works for Heath Slater. It could work for Jinder too, but man, he's got to lose the turban.
You're not a fan of that.
I'm not trying to be racist or anything. To pull that look off, you got to lose the turban.
He had his Indian gimmick already. Now you're part of the three-man band now. Mm-hmm. It's not a three-man bunger group. Yeah. Take off the turban.
Yeah. What about the name three-man band?
Well, when I see 3MB, I immediately think 3 Megabyte. What are these guys?
That is true, 3 Megabyte. Like, but it's a spin-off Slater's moniker, so whatever. It works.
Do you think this will take off?
I think probably for the first part, they're just meant to be a comedy group, but who knows? Maybe in the future, they could get pushed a little.
I say expect a lot of matches against the likes of Santino and Zack Ryder, because you're definitely right. It is comic. Either that or expect them to be squashed.
I will say this, as comedic as these three may be put out there to be, I think that this new direction that these three are heading, I think it's
at least they're
their
doing
careers.
Something.
I think it's
thing.
Saving.
I'm sure they're happy with it. Yeah. It's positive, and it was better than anything else. Definitely that Drew McIntyre and Jinder were doing. Heath kind of had his little thing going for a while there. He's kind of crept up on the radar, just being that punching bag kind of.
Hell must have frozen over, because who would have ever thought Heath Slater would be the leader of a faction?
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm just waiting for the concert announcement, fellas. waiting for the debut song.
Whenever I see Heath Slater, all that comes to my mind is the Wendy's girl. That promo that Cena cut on him.
You got it. That's the leader of the group right there.
The Wendy's girl.
All right, guys. That's going to wrap up Tale of the Tape this week. As we said last week, we're going to focus on local wrestling here. So let's kick off the local wrestling scene.
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
love that guitar.
There's nothing cooler than Wild Child.
Three-man band's got nothing on Wild Child. All right, guys. Let's talk about ECCW Halloween Hell. Actually, first, no. I'm going to backtrack for a second.
You backtrack.
Let's talk about ASW All-Star Wrestling because we're going to get to an interview regarding ECCW. So All-Star Wrestling, they do have a show tomorrow in Cloverdale. If you want tickets and more information, www.allstarwrestling.biz.
That's .biz, not B-I-Z. .com or .ca or nothing.
Tough to remember. But that's taking place out in Cloverdale.
Absolutely.
Basso, do you got the lineup there?
We have the Cloverdale Fairgrounds, Alice McKay Building, of course, tomorrow, Friday, October 19th. Doors at 7:30. Sorry, bell time, 7:30. Doors at 7. Of course, this is part of the Cool, Cocky, and Bad Tour. Of course, the Honky Tonk Man making a stop at ECCW and also the... Right. Vancouver Comic Con in the recent past here. He'll also be tuned here with ASW. Like I said, the Friday show in Cloverdale that'll also feature the likes of Disco Fury as well as The Riot. Nicole Matthews and Randy Myers of ECCW will also be making appointments.
What?
I just tripped there. You're going to have to edit that out. Anyways.
And no, I'm not.
The two days later on Sunday, they're in Abbotsford as the second part of the Cool, Cocky, Bad Tour. Honky Tonk Man, of course, in attendance. The ASW making a name for themselves in Cloverdale and in Abbotsford, their two main homes. And yeah, the Honky Tonk Man, he'll be there.
Interesting.
Always a fun night when the Honky Tonk Man's involved.
He seems to be coming to Vancouver a little more often these days.
Maybe he likes it here.
Yeah, we hadn't seen him for years, and now he's back a few times, which is okay. ECCW, though, on the other hand.
Their biggest show of the year is coming up.
I don't know, though. I have some questions about it so far. I have to say, it doesn't look like as many people are talking about Halloween Hell this year as many have in the past. Before we get into it all, though, ECCW.com is their website for tickets and information. Now, Halloween Hell is their, I guess you could call it WrestleMania of the year for the ECCW. Definitely the most entertaining show.
If there's any ECCW show you're going to check out all year, it's definitely got to be Halloween Hell.
It has the importance of WrestleMania with the style and flavor of Halloween Havoc.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way of... Yeah. That's a very good
but
way
But it's in a new building this year, and it's at Sapperton's Pension Hall. Sapperton Pensioners Hall.
In New West.
Should be a lot of people sipping coffee, I think.
I was going to say some doilies. You know, it's going to be a very, very calm atmosphere.
What is
I think.
A pensioner's hall?
Have you either of you, boy, you I guess neither of you been to this new
I've
venue?
I've never been to the pensioner's hall.
I've been to this one.
I know they used to run their old New West shows out of the Eagles Hall, and they got pretty ugly. And that's kind of what we've become accustomed to at the Bridgeview is the mayhem, the carnage. They pretty much, the tenants there at, the owners there at Bridgeview pretty much let ECCW have reign when the building is in their possession for the night. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like in New West at a brand new building, brand new owners that you're trying to impress. But yeah, it's your bloodiest, most crazy show of the year. So
I hope they die. It's going to be interesting to see. I really hope they keep to the norm of Halloween Hell and the expectations that people have come to expect with that event, because that's what makes it great.
Absolutely. You and I went to last year's Halloween Hell, and it's going to be very interesting to see if they can top it this year.
So not too many matches so far announced for the show. Their buzz is definitely there. But we do have a 4 tag team gauntlet match announced. The Bollywood Boys, Gurv Sierra and Harv Sierra versus Team Live Badass, which is Ethan HD and Mike Santiago with Natural at ringside, of course. And they're also going to be taking on the Stallions, Artemis Spencer and Tony Baroni, and the Greedfather, Jordy Taylor and Red De Niro with Michael Sweetser in their corner. So 4 tag teams in the ring at once, it sounds like.
Not to mention Sweetser and the Natural at ringside at the same time.
That just has funny written all over it.
A lot of tag action, a lot of talented guys in that match. Of the 5 matches booked so far, that's probably the one I'm looking forward to the most, because those guys are all very talented wrestlers. Those are the type of guys that aren't going to need blood, guts, carnage, costumes, and candy to get it done. Those guys will get it done with a pair of boots and some tights.
All very technically sound.
We also have a match involving Bishop, and Natural will be in his corner, taking on Ravenous Randy Myers.
Which has become quite the program. I won't go into too much detail. The show that just wrapped up on the weekend. An epic hair versus hair match, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Bishop getting shaved completely bald.
Really?
And he had some long locks there for a while, so it was between Ravenous's the hawk, always rocking the hawk, as he says, and Bishop's long, curly dreads there, and he got lopped. So he's bald now. He's looking for vengeance. It's going to be ugly.
Will he go for the buzz cut, or will he go all the way with the shiny bald?
Like, he's going to bick it, you think?
Yeah.
I don't know how good Bishop would look with that. The bick job.
Yeah.
And then he could dress up as Stone Cold for Halloween Hell.
Well, I hate to break your bubble, Corey. Burst your bubble, rather. No costume battle royal this year.
Hmm.
Really?
That's a big disappointment.
I'm hearing rumors, yeah. And that was one of the staples. That's what people show up for. The fans show up in costume themselves, but the wrestlers need to have some fun, too.
Why do you think that is?
I honestly don't know. Maybe just a lack of ideas. Maybe a lack of resources. Maybe they don't feel like going buying any more costumes. I got too much sitting at home. I don't know.
Maybe summer went so long that no one's in the Halloween spirit yet. No?
That's a terrible thing to say. Who's not in the Halloween spirit?
All right. Well, let's talk more about Halloween Hell. We're doing 2 weeks of coverage. And what better person to start talking about Halloween Hell with than this guy facing Jason Sullivan in a 3 stages of hell match for the ECCW Championship. We welcome to the show the challenger, Sid Sylum. Sid, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, bro. Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no worries. So this is the first time we've ever got a chance to talk to you. I mean, you've been around the local circuit for quite some time. For the
7 years this month.
7 years. That's pretty impressive as a wrestling career. Yeah. For the people who have never heard of Sid Sylum before, who may not reside in the Lower Mainland area, just give us a bit of a background on who you are and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I've been wrestling here for 7 years now. Started 2005. I actually debuted at Halloween Hell with Kyle O'Reilly and who was around Gerv Sira. And got trained by Scotty Mack, and I've wrestled pretty much all over BC, into Hollywood and Oregon and walked through Washington. So yeah, I've been doing this at it a while now.
Do you do a lot of traveling on the indie scene, or do you try and keep it in the Lower Mainland?
No. I'm in Portland, or Oregon for DOA every month. One half of the Super Stash Brothers, which is some amazing mustaches we grow out.
Oh, God.
And me and Kyle were a tag team down in Hollywood for the when it was NWA Hollywood Showcase before NWA Hollywood, and we were the Northern Lights. Faced Julie Ryan, Little Guido. So yeah, I got some traveling in.
Sylum, what is your take on the WWE today? Are you happy with what you're seeing? Are you a little disappointed? Because it's always interesting to get a wrestler's take on the current product. Because for me, as I'm just a fan of wrestling, and I have to say I'm not the biggest fan of wrestling these days. But I'd be interested to hear your take. Are you enjoying what you see on television?
I'm enjoying aspects of it, but the three-hour Raw is just, it's too long. If me being a wrestler, if it can't hold me for 3 hours, you know, I can't imagine how the average person watching it can watch for 3 hours. Everyone's, you know, the same other than, you know, you got Punk and Ziggler. And other than that, I really don't overly enjoy too many people. And Kofi's all right.
And why is that? Like, do you have an explanation as to why you may not be enjoying it as much as you did when you were a kid, or is it just a fact of growing up?
I wish I could answer that, but I've wondered if it's just because I've grown up. But all the guys, no one really stands out anymore. The problem is they're all made, and you know, most of the guys came from FCW or you know even OVW, so they're all trained the Fed, you know how the Fed wants people. So no one's got that experience to learn different ways. They're all, you know, they're all trained one way. So you're only going to get one type of person. And then, you end up with a roster full of guys that really aren't that different from each other.
Mm-hmm. Comparing what you see on television to what you do locally in Vancouver with the ECCW, obviously you are a big fan of the independent scene, but what is your take on the independent scene in British Columbia these days?
You know what? It's pretty good, actually. You know, now that you know all the companies are getting along. You know, ECCW is going to go to the island at the end of the month. You know, they got Big West covering up in the interior and stuff like that. And then you know, All Star and ECCW in the main part of the Lower Mainland. You know, most of BC is getting some decent wrestling out of it, which is it's great. For a while, it was just kind of Surrey, Vancouver, Abbotsford, Poco, but you know. More shows that are drawing better and everyone's getting to work more and, you know, better show for the fans.
When you were first starting out as an independent wrestler, was the dream, like every wrestler, I'm sure, to go all the way and try and make it to the WWE? Or was this more of a part-time hobby for you or not necessarily hobby isn't the right word, but is this a part-time passion for you?
No, you know, when I think if when you start out your dream's not to go to the Fed, it's you should probably just quit. You got enough people that don't really care, you know, don't hit the gym or anything like that. But no, you know, when I started out, you know, I got like 115 matches or something my first year, which was pretty insane for someone around here. I think we all mostly got that. But no, you know, your dream should always be to go to the Fed and make some money, because whether you like the product or not, they're going to be the only ones to pay you, you know, so you can wrestle full time. But
do you remember I was just going to ask you, do you remember the first time you had went to an independent show? And do you remember that, like, is that, were you sold that day, or was it the WWE that had inspired you to get into wrestling?
No, I remember seeing my first show when I was 5 with my dad, WCCW, I think Star ran it or something, but it was, the GOD was still going on, it was Star and Canuck breaking up every week and then getting back together, and
yes.
You had Adam Firestorm in a dragon costume, and they came out to Puff the Magic Dragons, and they were a tag team in massive dragon costumes. It was incredible. Yeah, just when I went with 5, was at Cloverdale. Been hooked ever since then.
Let me ask you something that I don't always ask independent wrestlers, and it might take you off guard, but what is it that you don't like about independent wrestling?
My main problem is there's no showers.
Fair good enough.
Answer, that's the main problem of anyone who has to sit beside us at any point after a show.
Now, I hear rumors said that you guys have to, like, literally bathe in the sink after shows. Or you were telling me one time about, like, a wrestler shower. What does that entail?
The wrestler shower is similar to a hobo shower. But you, I remember I wrestled in, where the hell was I? I was in TCW and I wrestled Aaron Bolo and Damon James. And they do a Stone Cold gimmick, but instead of beer, they do Rockstar Lemonades.
Oh. And
when we did the gimmick where I went to join them and I drank the Rockstar Lemonades and I turned around, took a stunner and spat it all out, and then they covered me in the Rockstar Lemonade, and I get to the back and realize I don't have anything to really change into, and wearing my gear across. So now I'm covered from head to toe in Rockstar Lemonade.
Ew.
And have to drive the 2 hours back to Canada. So I did the wrestler shower, which is where you get some napkins or paper towel, and you go in the sink and you wash yourself. You give yourself a sponge bath, essentially, in the shower. I was doing that at TCW, and I didn't realize that it was just like a public washroom. And I'm in there, nothing but my gear, giving myself a wrestler shower, and like 5 little kids walk in, and I'm pretty sure they look like Santa, the Easter Bunny, and everything ever was just murdered in front of them. They were horrified.
Wow.
Well, that about, most people would walk in.
That about wraps up this interview. No,
well,
but on a more
time to hit the old dusty trail.
On a more serious note, though, is there anything that you find wrong with indie wrestling these days, or aside from the shower?
That, well, you know, there's too many people who shouldn't be running shows, and shouldn't be wrestling on shows. You know, you have people that have never been trained or had one training class, and they're training other people claiming to be trained, and then you know, you end up with an influx of a roster of 20 guys, and maybe one or two of them's trained and the rest are, you know.
And have you experienced that yourself in the ring?
I've had to wrestle a couple people that were pretty much trained in a homemade ring. But you know, everyone screws around when they're a kid, but you know, when you reach an adult, time to grow up, and if you're, you know, if you really love wrestling, go get trained, because you're doing nothing but hurting it, really, by continuing on with your facade of being a wrestler.
You mentioned injuries there, possible injuries. I know that you've had some injuries in the past throughout your career. You just overcame one, I believe it was late last year. Just how seriously hurt have you been in your wrestling career?
I've had bad hips since I was a kid, but wrestling kind of prolonged it. And what was my last show, Halloween Hell, I think 2010 was the breaking point, and I had to get my hip scoped at 23, I guess it would have been.
Wow.
So that kept me out for a while, because I had a bunch of bone spurs in my in my hip bone. You know, I cracked my head open to the bone last New West show, which was fun. I just got the stitches out right after my match in Vancouver last week. Other than that, broke my finger when I lost the belt to Jason Sullivan. I can't even count the number of concussions, but I've been lucky. Overall, it's a dangerous thing. You look at someone like Aaron Bolo, who's still in his 20s, and they told him if he ever wrestled again, he might die. So, you always got to kind of be thankful that it could be worse.
Let's talk about Jason Sullivan and Halloween Hill, as you previously mentioned. You are taking him on in a 3 Stages of Hell match for the ECCW Championship, and this is happening at Halloween Hill, October 27th. What exactly is 3 Stages of Hell match?
It's a 2 out of 3 falls with a gimmick in each fall. They announced the first 2 falls. The first fall is going to be a first blood match, and then the second fall is going to be an extreme match. So it's a two out of three falls with the volume kind of turned up.
And what's your track record with Jason Sullivan? Have you faced him in the ring before?
I faced him twice. And the first time he threw me off the balcony, and that was,
hey, that felt good.
That was, yeah, I guess so. And then the second time was at Last Man Standing when he beat me for the belt. We've actually only faced each other twice in Canada here, so not a good track record going in. No.
Speaking of track records, you may have to correct me here, but have you ever won at Halloween Hell?
I've come in second plenty of times.
Out of 2, yes.
Yeah. No, I've never won at Hell, actually.
Huh.
Is this year the year, or are you going to get peeled out again? Because last year you took a chair off the top rope to the head from Bishop. The year before they had to peel you out of the cage with your buggered up hip. Well, what's it going to be this year, man? Are you going to get decapitated or what?
You always got to raise the bar.
Hopefully not to decapitation, Sid.
Decapitation, you've seen Mortal Kombat. No,
does that ever worry you, man, that you have to keep pushing the bar? And, like, I don't think you have any more bar left to push, man, over the last 2 years anyways.
Well, that was kind of my concern when me and Jason started really going at this was, our first match of us feuding. He threw me off a 20-foot balcony. Jeez. So you kind of got to think, where do you go from there? I think we've done a good job at keeping the push it.
Yeah.
At Last Man Standing, but Hell's going to be it's going to be exciting. It's 3 days short of my 7-year anniversary of wrestling. It's my 7th Halloween Hell. So I'm really excited to kind of push the boundaries and go even a little bit further. Hopefully staying a little bit safer than I have in the last couple of years.
Now, what is it about Halloween Hell that just makes the event so special? I mean, it really is. Well, it could be argued that it is ECCW's most entertaining show of the year. I mean, obviously the fans, they come out in their costumes and that part's great. But for some reason in my head, there's something always that's really special about Halloween Hell. There's a different vibe that show that night. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. It's everyone's kind of favorite show of the year. The crowds are always bigger. You got always people that just come out for Halloween Hell. It's just always, you get the biggest crowd, which amps everyone up, and it's really the best overall show. Like, you always got, you got a fan bring the weapons, you always got a cage match. And then it's not all hardcore. You got some great actual wrestling action. Ever since I've started, like, my first show there, it was 400 people. Like, Hell has been going huge for 10 years now. And there's something about it. It's been, there's probably been 15 of them already, at least, maybe 17. It's always a big show. It's our equivalent of WrestleMania, obviously on a much smaller scale. But there's a different vibe for sure. Like you said, when you walk into the building, this isn't just going to be a normal show.
Now, Sid, speaking about walking into the building, you guys walk into a new building this year, the Sapperton Pensioners Hall. Is that going to change anything as far as the card, what we may see as far as violence? Because they let you pretty much get away with murder at the Bridgeview Hall for quite a few years. You guys have built a rapport with each other. to the point where they're pretty much letting you guys run the show. What's it going to be like at the Sapperton Hall now that you might have a new tenant to please and maybe blood and guts isn't the way to go about it?
You know, it's something that I'm sure people are worried about. There's a large no confetti sign right when you first walk in.
So no confetti?
No confetti.
And they're having a wrestling show there.
Yeah, well, you know, the third fall was going to be no confetti match.
But. Yeah.
But really, what do you think the differences might be as far as what we might see in the show and maybe how the fans react to that?
It's a different building. You know, Bridgeview Hall, you have such a huge open space. Well, in New West at Sapperton Hall, you got, you know, the ceiling's only 15 feet. So our steel cage isn't going to fit in there. You know, it's a smaller building, and hopefully, you know, if we can keep things contained a little bit, but at a hell of things kind of have a habit to get a little out of control really fast. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic, but I think it's still going to be a really good show, and everyone should be happy.
I'm sure the fans will not leave disappointed. Sid Sylum, we're out of time, unfortunately. I want to thank you very much for coming on behalf of myself, Basso, and James. Really appreciate it. And one thing I want to do in the future as well is I want to get you in studio to talk about WWE and the product that you're watching on television, because I can tell just by talking with you that you really do have a passion for the industry, and you might know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys. You know, I'd love to anytime.
So there you go, guys. Sid Sylum definitely sounds like he knows what he's talking about when it comes to professional wrestling.
Very talented individual in the ring as well.
Mm-hmm. And he's been in enough bloody gruesome matches, so if there's anybody to talk to about Halloween Hell, it's probably him.
I'm actually really excited to see this match of him versus Jason Sullivan for the championship. And part of me, not because he just came on the radio show, but because I really like Sid Sylum in the ring, part of me hopes he does walk away with the championship that night.
His second ECCW championship ring, mm-hmm. with the new belt, at least. Yeah. The new Elite Championship belt.
Now, next week on our show, we are definitely going to continue our build-up to Halloween Hell and the coverage that we are providing. It's going to have your same, Basso, possibly Casey Spinelli on the show.
Wow. Lined up Supergirl Casey Spinelli, not supposed to be on the card for this year's show. She was on the card last year, winning her first ECCW Supergirls Championship from Nicole Matthews. She's not going to be on the show, but it'll be interesting to get a woman's perspective, because sometimes when you're wrestling just a bare-bones women's wrestling match, it might be kind of tough to go up against those blood and guts kind of matches that the bloodthirsty fans come from. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to get her perspective and see what it's really like from a women's wrestler's perspective in this bloody, gruesome showdown that is Halloween Hell.
And another person who apparently has told me that he's been at every single Halloween Hell since it started, The Natural, is going to be on our show next week, and he's going to give us some history.
Awesome. He's on always Halloween a great interview.
Hell. Yeah.
That man can talk. We know that. He loves to talk.
ECCW.com for more information about Halloween Hell, October 27th at the Pensioners Hall in Sapperton. In New Westminster, I guess that would be.
It's right by the Sapperton SkyTrain station. I was critical of the new location because I was like, this better be near transit. This better be near transit. It is. Right by the Sapperton SkyTrain station if you're wanting to walk there and not have to drive.
Beautiful.
All right, now let's switch gears here completely away from wrestling, like we always talk on this show. I figured it's nice to take a little break and maybe talk about something a little more lighthearted than professional wrestling, if you can believe that. A show that could be almost compared to the same audience. I mean, wrestling fans and Trailer Park Boy fans, they've got to be somewhat together.
You're treading a fine line here,
I think
my
it's
friend.
A bit of a same similar relationship.
It is a kind of a blue-collar crowd, but at the same time, you can find your white-collars and just about anybody, like in either one of wrestling or the Trailer Park Boys. Both have heels, both have faces, both have storylines, both are extremely fun to watch.
So let's set this up properly. Basso, late at night the other day, you just decide to message this guy on Twitter.
I
professing your love to the guy, basically.
Not professing my love, professing my respect. CM Punk garners respect. I tried to do the same thing for our guest here for today. I was at home. I had had a few pops. I was feeling excited. Was scanning some old YouTube clips of Trailer Park Boys. Saw a couple of his clips. Just went into some research, you know, where are these guys up to these days? You know, Trailer Park Boys has been off the air since 2008. It ran for 7 years from 2001. Who are these guys? What are they doing nowadays? Came across his Twitter handle, dropped him a quick message, to which he responded to very promptly, which I was like, oh, that's cool, because, you know, this guy's a parasocial friend of mine, so to speak. I really dig his character. And then you started the ball rolling on the conversation. Now he's on the show.
I know. Unbelievable. And before we get to this interview, let's just talk about the Canadian show Trailer Park Boys for people who may have never seen it before.
James.
In my opinion.
Like me.
In my opinion, comedic gold and one of the best shows in Canadian history. I'm sure a lot of people would debate that, like my mother. But I really believe that that is a gem of Canadian television. What's your thoughts on Trailer Park Boys?
I completely agree. Though it did air all around the world, it is very distinctly Canadian, and it is something only Canadians would get. Some of the stuff they talk about, the way they say it, their accents, just where they're living over in the Maritimes there, it's very Canadian. And I don't find it easy to relate to because I'm not at all like the Trailer Park Boys. But it's funny to shut
Liar.
Up, shut up, shut your mouth.
You grew up in Surrey, didn't you?
It's funny. Yeah. You know what? Anyways, I got to keep my tweener status here. I can't go full here, full heel. But I just think it's very distinctly Canadian, and it has so much. Even if you're an American, that you'd be like, man, that kind of looks like it would be fun to be a Trailer Park Boy.
Yeah. When I lived down south and I was working on a cruise ship, I would show people from all over the world the TV show, The Trailer Park Boys. And I'm telling you, every person I showed it to laughed hysterically, whether they were from Europe, whether they were from Australia, from United States. None of them had heard of the TV show before, but they all laughed hysterically every single time I showed it to them. And they just, they're like, is that how it is in Canada? And as much as I want to say no, the truth of the matter is I find that show to be a very real depiction of what trailer parks in Canada are like. I have buddies that have grown up on trailer parks. I've seen what they're like in action. And it's a very real show. Now, aside from the actual storyline of the show, one other thing that really impresses me about the Trailer Park Boys, and this coming from my television background, is this was the first time we had a show that was kind of shot to look like it wasn't a real TV show.
It was a mockumentary style.
A mockumentary style. Those were quite new in the day. The Office is really the one that set mockumentaries. They really put mockumentaries on the map.
Right.
But before The Office, there was the Trailer Park Boys. And the Trailer Park Boys, it was, I swear, they had like a budget of nothing, but they were making gold out of it.
It was the handycam way of filming. It took a handycam and they followed the guys around, and that's all it was. And the allure of that was that it looked real. Mm-hmm. For the first season, a lot of people were saying, have you seen this show? Documentary following Trailer Park Boys. And I go, guys.
I can see how people would get confused initially watching the show.
Guys,
yeah.
It's a show. It's written. It's scripted. Because I got it. Because I've been watching it for a while. It was still very underground. But just the way it was done until the later stages of the later seasons where they got more money, more profession, more of a budget, more production, actually. The lack of production in those first two seasons, I thought, did wonders and probably saved them a ton of cash. And it's what gave the feel to the show.
It seemed that the less money they spent on the budget of the show, the better it was. And that's, like, rare to find. From a producer's standpoint, that's
disaster.
Like the best. No, that's the best scenario you could ask for.
I feel
for.
So out of the loop over here, having seen only
I
the two movies.
I can't believe you never
man.
Watch this show.
No, I've never. Ugh. I've never. I've only seen the two
James,
movies. The
get out.
James isn't Canadian.
Out. Yeah, oh. Get out.
Take him to the border.
Yeah.
Where's your green card?
Jeez. Yeah. Regardless, James, we did have an opportunity, Basso and I, to speak earlier today with one of the great characters of the show, Trailer Park Boys. His real name is Bernie Robichaud. You may remember him in the TV show as Cyrus.
The gun-toting, leather jacket-wearing, Corvette-driving, rock-and-roll-blaring, drug-dealing knucklehead that took over the trailer park, only to have it repossessed by Julian. And apparently he's not as tough as they say that, Cyrus. It's all in his gun.
Well, what's beautiful about Cyrus is the gun, how he is so tough because he's one of those guys that's waving a gun in the air just to show everyone that he has one.
And, of course, his signature line, which I won't blow for anybody, but I'm sure we'll get it here, is a doozy and one that's easily sticks out in your mind.
So Trailer Park Boys did end in 2008. There was a movie that came afterwards, possibly rumors of a Trailer Park Boys 3 coming out. But it's been quite a few years since Trailer Park Boys has ended. With our chat earlier today with Bernie Robichaud, we first asked him just, you know, what he's up to since the Trailer Park Boys has finished.
Last couple of years, I've been touring. I started getting asked to do appearances, much the same as the three boys, and Randy and Leahy, and because the character people said was as popular as some of the others. So I said, okay, sounds good. Where do I sign up for that gig?
And so this is like stand-up comedy or stand-up comedy type gig?
Hey, you know, initially people just wanted me to show up and appear as the character, which was difficult to do. It's one thing to appear as a character. It's very difficult to appear as a character and then, you know, shake everybody's hand and then tell them all to fuck off, which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
But it's comparative. I was going to say it's comparative to being a professional wrestler, because that's what a lot of wrestlers do as well. They got to show up in these characters, and sometimes they may not even want to, right? But
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about it. Appearing in character is difficult. It's just that, you know, you meet a lot of nice people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're truly interested in who you are and not knowing the character so much. Now, that doesn't mean after I tell them my name that they're not going to call me Cyrus right afterwards. But yeah. I mean, the point is that, you know, they're truly just happy that you're there.
How difficult of a decision is it after the Trailer Park Boys is over as an actor to decide, okay, am I going to continue with this character that has made me famous, or is it quite an easy decision? Did you know that that's what you were going to do, and it just seemed obvious that that was the path you were going to take?
I think that you have to kind of look at the Trailer Park Boys much the same as you would look at any of the characters that I've done, let's say Seinfeld or perhaps more maybe Star Trek. Let's put it in the Star Trek kind of mode, because at least with Star Trek, we know that, you know, people have done those characters for a number, and everybody sees them, especially with Trekkies, they see them as, that's the only character they see them as. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, I kind of saw Trailer Park Boys and the way that the boys initially started traveling, because they all traveled in character whenever they went, that it was going to be one of those things where, you know, Cyrus was just, didn't matter if I could show up with a Johnny shirt on, and as long as I had my sunglasses on, people would say, oh, look, Cyrus, what are you doing with that Johnny shirt on? That's weird. You know, so I just kind of embraced it, realized that that was what it was going to be. Had to understand that there were some issues that would manifest itself because of that. You know, you're not going to be able to please everybody. You're going to have to deal with a lot of different things, the questions and everything else. And at the same time, you're looking to be able to further your career, and you don't want to be stuck in, you know, that's the only character you've ever done. Mm-hmm. So,
well, let's get into some meat and potatoes here, Bernie. A lot of people want to know, with all the boozing and the smoking that was going on during the show, that's a big reason why I was kind of a following out here in the West, because we do have quite a prevalent marijuana culture. But was there any good party stories? Was it on behind the scenes what it was like on scene?
No, it really wasn't. I don't smoke at all. I'm not sure.
That's surprising.
The other guys, yeah. No, I was an athlete all my life, so I never really took it up. I'm not sure what the other guys did. I mean, I know what it's like when I go on tour.
Okay.
I can only assume that there's some parties going on there, and some pretty damn good ones at that. You know, so no, I don't think, you know, Mike and the producers were very adamant about that sort of thing taking place on set or around the set or anything like that. I'm sure whatever you did in your own house or, you know, that's up to you, but around the set or anything like that, I was never privy to it if it did happen, that's for sure.
This character,
I would think not.
This character, Cyrus, I mean, you know, Basso had mentioned that he likes to have a good time. He's waving the gun around. He's always intimidating in his red Corvette. How much of this character was your idea, and how much was it Mike Clattenburg's or the other people's vision in the show? Was it yours or was it theirs?
Well, you know, I think the character was somewhat written. I have to say that most of the character was probably And the way I portrayed Cyrus as a drug dealer was really, those were my choices. I think that they were, and the producers were just happy with that. And when I auditioned, that's what they asked me to do. So when I went on set my first day, I knew exactly what my character was going to be like. He was going to be kind of like several, not too bright, somewhat, you know, I grew up with some guys in my neighborhood that were, you know, they weren't too swift and a little ADD. And, I kind of modeled Cyrus after those guys just because, and I think I did a pretty good job of that actually, because I think Cyrus is a little not too bright and the way he jumps around on set, I think he looks like he's got ADD.
And you had talked about the first day on set. You know, you are in the first episode of the Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah.
The first day the first episode that you're shooting with these guys, did you realize in your head that this was something special and that you had something there? Or were you unsure at that point? Because I would have to imagine, Trailer Park Boys was...
Oh, no, we were...
I was going to say, it was pretty innovative in the way they shot it.
No, the second season we weren't even sure.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, both the first and second season. I remember the second season we were shooting, and me and in between scenes in the classroom, and me and Rob were standing out in the hallway in the school, and we were saying, "Geez, man, it's hard to believe, eh? Get another season." He goes, "Yeah, I know, man. It's weird. We got like 13 episodes after the season." I said, "Yeah, it's like one whole season, only in two."
Wow. So the whole first season.
It wasn't until after the second season, of course, that the third season, and it just kind of blossomed from there, kind of took off.
Huh.
So yeah.
Just moving back into the Cyrus character, just a couple questions as a fan who gets chances to watch these episodes over and over and gets accustomed to the character and gets to learn about him. What's the deal with the Corvette that plays the same music every single time?
I'm not sure because there wasn't an 8-track in that Corvette. There's very little in it at all. I don't know. That's I'm Old, You're Young by Rick Jeffrey. Rick Jeffrey was Mike Clattenburg's father was a drummer, and Rick and his brother Jack, they both passed away since, but Mike's father played in the band, so Mike knew the music. Mike's quite a drummer himself, actually, and I think that was part of it.
The idea of having Cyrus have a Corvette.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The idea of Cyrus having a Corvette, whose idea was that?
I don't know whose idea that was. I know that the car was one of Rob Wells' friends. Car actually came from, I think, out of Manitoba, actually. And it just happened to be part of the deal. I don't know why, but it looked like something, you know, Cyrus would drive. It certainly was. I think at one point I had a red Camaro there, I think, in one episode, but it changed to the Corvette after that.
I think I had the Corvette
in the first season, but I think in the second season, I thought in the trailer park thing,
I don't remember.
There was actually, I think there was a red Camaro that they actually had there.
Oh, I don't remember seeing that.
No, maybe not. I don't know. I can't remember. I thought there was a red Camaro there at one point, but I do know, like, in, I think they also used like a DeLorean for something, and that was supposed to be Cyrus's car. And
you guys must have had some good laughs
in the second special.
As you drove,
in the second special.
Sorry, Bernie, I was going to ask, you must have had some good laughs there as you filmed these scenes. I mean, you must have broke down laughing many times.
Well, there's no question about that. There was some pretty priceless things that were, I'm not even sure they show up on the DVDs and the outtakes. I mean, Probably not.
Now there's rumors of a Trailer Park Boys 3 movie coming out. What can you tell us about that? And are you going to be a part of the project?
Well, I'm not sure it's happening. I heard it's on hold. So I was told I was part of the project. Yes. What's happened with it? I'm not even sure, to be honest with you. Could be on hold for a bit. Sometimes that happens with productions. I've been part of them before where they get geared up to shoot and, you know, one thing or another, you know, and you're on hold for a while. So I like to say that it's going to happen, whether it will or not. I'm not in the position to be able to tell you one way or the other, but I certainly hope that it does. It would be great for not just for a lot of fans that are out there that are hoping that it'll happen and or it'll come back, certainly with the popularity of it growing in the United States because of Netflix. I think it would be good for everybody. There's no question.
We touched on it earlier about what you are up to these days. If people do want to catch you in action, or if they want to follow you online, how do they go about seeing you these days?
Yeah, okay. Well, you can see me at Dez's Comedy Club on the 1st. Rocky Mountain Food and Beverage appearances, 2nd and 3rd in Edmonton. You can always follow me on Twitter, at Bernie Robichaux, or I've got a few pages on Facebook under my name, Bernard Robichaux. And right now, just I'm happy to be part of Callback Corporate Entertainment. They're an agency for Canadian comics, and they do, MC, Celebrity House, they do a lot of fundraising events, but they do specialty performers, so I'm happy to be working with Nancy Beaven and Judy Sims there, so... They're out of Calgary, so people can always call my agent. if they wanted Cyrus' appearance.
That's right.
Or you could just, you can contact me, but still go through my agent. Lots of people do that through Twitter, like you guys contact me. I'm very open to any of the people that have supported me, and I don't mind talking to anybody that approaches me. That's never been my problem, really. I think I'm quite humbled by the fact that I've been put into this position. I think it's only right that I give back to some of those people that have supported me, and whether it's a couple minutes of my time, I don't see that as being a big issue, I'm quite grateful for all those things. There's no doubt.
And Bernie, I would say the exact same thing to you. Thank you for all the laughs throughout the series. It's one of my favorite series. I know it's one of Basso's as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so thank you. Yeah. And I really appreciate
my pleasure.
Yeah, really appreciate you coming on the show, man.
No problem. Now fuck off. I got work to do.
There you go, Bernie Robichaux from the Trailer Park Boys.
We had to see that coming.
It's like professional wrestling without the wrestling.
The comparisons, though, between wrestling and Trailer Park Boys really are...
They do parallel quite a bit, yeah.
And they are quite embellished. I don't think every Trailer Park is like that. But you know what? I like it like that.
Are you a fan of the non-wrestling interview on Smack Talk Radio Live?
I don't mind it once in a while. It'd help if I knew who the guy was, but you guys love him, so that's all that's important. So
I'm a big fan of Cyrus.
I'm a big fan of Cyrus, but I'm also a big fan of the off-topic wrestling interview. I think maybe once a month we can bring on somebody, whoever we happen to be talking about, or if we have some mutual interests or whatever, get some people on. Hopefully they know something about wrestling. That does help.
So Hell in a Cell. Well, first of all, or lastly, I should say, thank you to Bernie Robichaux for coming on the show. Now, switching gears back to wrestling, I was going to say Hell in a Cell, October 28th from the Phillips Arena in Atlanta, Georgia. Are you buying the pay-per-view, James?
Actually, you know what? I'm very seriously considering it. Just for the whole situation surrounding the main event.
I will be purchasing the pay-per-view.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, I'm interested to see what they're going to do. Are they going to put the title on Ryback so soon, or are they going to make him lose clean? Or like, it's very interesting to see what they're going to do here. Hmm.
All right. Well, this will wrap up another edition of Smack Talk Radio Live this week. I got to say, James, I let you pick the music. This is not doing it for me.
Well, it's a little slow to begin, but it gets better.
I have no comment. Really. The even worse is the video that comes along it as we play it. It's like something looks off of National Geographic.
This is a cool song that was at the end of the Mortal Kombat. You remember the Mortal Kombat movie back in 95?
I remember Mortal Kombat, but I don't remember the bad songs. I only remember the good ones.
Can we go back to Dirty Diana, please?
Yeah. www.smacktalkradiolive.com, facebook.com/smacktalkradio, and we're on Twitter at SRL Radio. This was another edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. We are looking for thoughts and opinions from the viewers, or from the listeners, I should say, on the week it was in professional wrestling. Send us your thoughts to onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. You'll be entered in a chance to win 2 tickets to Halloween Hell, ECCW's Halloween Hell. We're going to give those tickets away at the end of the show next week. So you got a week to get your thoughts and opinions on the week it was. And I'm telling you, that's not a bad prize this week.
I think that's an excellent prize. The value in that is just through the roof. You're going to see 3 hours of great wrestling. You're going to see some costumes. You're going to see some wild fans. You're going to see me, Corey, and James. We'll be there. Come shake our hands. That's give us right. A kiss. We'll be there.
James, you're lucky the song's picking up.
I was going to say,
what did I tell you? You guys don't trust me ever, do you? You guys never trust me.
I apologize, James. It did pick up, and we'll get you. We're coming okay. Right.
All righty. Let's kick it out of here for another week. We'll be back next Thursday, I believe.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
Well, I'll be back. I don't know if these two clowns will be.
All right. You can just do the show by yourself then.
All righty.
Hey, you just talk to nobody.
I told you, I'm getting a shirt made. Hashtag just being a heel. I'm Corey Callahan.
I am James, the worst voice in radio, McDonald.
And I'm Corey, the tweener, Basso.
Smack Talk Radio Live. We'll see you next week.